Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com,
a production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 103 for April 9th, 2012. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Anger.
And for the second week in a row, somehow I'm Joe Steinkamp. How did that happen?
Yay, you're back. This may be a regular thing, you think?
So strange. Who knows? I mean,
yeah, right.
The next week the system will fall over or something will explode or something will happen. Maybe, you know, I hear there's a meteor coming and the world's supposed to end before the end of the year. I should actually go dig that basement and get all my food rations together.
Mm, yeah. Well, all right. Something to look forward to, I guess, huh?
That's right. Agreed. But we should look back at what happened last week, shouldn't we?
Let's do that. Last Sunday was April Fool's Day, and we did not let that go unnoticed, but apparently neither did some other companies. Google, most notably, did a April Fool's bit. And Joe, you actually pointed me to this one. Google, yeah, or actually Gmail Tap.
I love this.
This is a great video. Yeah.
Let's let them hear it, shall we?
Yeah.
Technology is everywhere today, and everyone has a smartphone.
Think about the size of that device. You know, it's only 2 inches, 2.5 inches, and we're trying to cram an entire 26-key keyboard into that space.
It's so many keys. I feel constricted by the keyboard.
I just feel very overwhelmed. There's so many buttons.
It's time to think about how can we do this better using the technology that we have today. And that's where Gmail Tap comes in.
So I've always known that I was related to Samuel F. B. Morse. He's my great-grandfather's grandfather's brother.
When Reed Morse first came to my office and he said he had an idea for bringing Morse code back, I got really excited.
Gmail Tap replaces the default keyboard in the Gmail application with one that only has two buttons.
Two keys, and every single letter in the alphabet can be spelled using just those two commands.
Morse code is perfect. It's just a dot and a dash. What's simpler than that?
When we first conceived of Gmail Tap, it was all about making input on the phone faster. We realized that we could double the speed again by doubling the number of keyboards you have.
You can actually split your screen and send two messages at once to two completely different recipients.
Gmail Tap multitasking, it's an improvement over speech. You can say two things with your fingers that your mouth can only say one of.
I really am excited to see where tapping takes us.
I think the people who will be best served by Gmail Tap are people with fat fingers.
People are going to be twice as productive, and people are going to be able to write emails anytime they want.
You can tap it in the morning. You can tap it at night. You can tap it in the bathroom. It's a dot and a dash to have a conversation with the entire world. It's great.
Hats off to Google for that, although I have to say that Serotech, as usual, was a bit ahead of the curve because our GTO note taker that we introduced last year on April Fool's Day was also powered by Morse code. So great minds think alike, I suppose.
Does that mean we get hired by Google?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, okay.
Well, Google could buy us.
Well, that'd be awesome, because I hear they have awesome food there. But at the end of the news feed, before you switch off this episode, we're going to stick on the GTO announcement. So if you hadn't already heard it in the RSS feed, we're going to just stick it on the end of this one, and you can get a chance to hear it.
We'll also have a link in the show notes to the initial GTO announcement, which happened last year.
Yeah, and you know, we also had a little bit of audio of our own for this podcast. You know, we were thinking about with Road to CSUN, we should make it more lively next year. And with that said, welcome in the amazing race to CSUN.
Coming to SPN,
You liked our coverage of ATIA, you loved our coverage of the new Apple thing that may or may not be released this fall, and you were completely indifferent about our coverage of the Westminster Kennel Club. But all that is nothing compared to what we have in store for you in 2013, when Saratalk brings you the amazing Race to CSUN. Yes, that's right. We took your feedback from our popular Road to CSUN travel log, and we turned it to 11 with these crazy new additions to next year's road trip. Just think, from New York to San Diego by way of public transportation?
Each one of you have a bag of coins. You need to find the correct number and kind of subway tokens needed to get you from here to the airport. While wearing these warm winter mittens, of course, we want you to keep your hands warm.
Yep, fun and exciting challenges are in store for our various teams as they work their way across the country, meeting up with others to find out their next leg of the journey, like this one from JJ Meadow.
Your challenge, if you choose to accept it, is to traverse the entire country on the way to the CSUN Conference, using only an original Trekker PDA.
And of course, we'll have live updates from the SPN crew as we travel along with our contestants.
Hey everyone, it's Joe Steinke reporting live on the Amtrak leg of our amazing Race to CSUN. Well, it's been 4 days, 3 derailments, and we've gone 60 miles on our trek to Kansas for this leg, and I think at this point, if everything goes right, we should be able to get to Kansas sometime before the next full moon. I'm hoping. Food is going well in the dining car, although I have seen one or two of our teams use their GPSs from their iDevices to go to a Burger King, so apparently the food isn't as great as everybody had thought. Let's see what happens when we get to the unicycle races later after we get to Wichita. That should be interesting.
Root for your favorite team as they go from the East Coast to the West. Will it be Team Mike Calvo, Team Jim Fruchterman, or Team Eric that dude who climbed Mount Everest on their way to San Diego, and the winner of the amazing Race to CSUN?
It was a lot of fun to be a part of that. I enjoyed doing that, and the final production there was quite interesting to listen to. So hats off to Patrick for helping us put all that stuff together. And yeah, it sounds like that should be fun. I've been going to the Y here lately and working out, so it's probably a good thing, because maybe if I'm a part of that, I may need to have my endurance, my stamina built up there for this amazing race.
You have to
race.
Get ready for the unicycle portion.
That's
you're
right.
You're just going to have to start getting ready now, and it's really, really crazy. But there were some other great ones. The one that got everybody was the Eloquence for iPhone. A lot of people fell for that, which I thought was really, really cool.
Yeah, that was very well done.
Let's see, we had GW Connect String, which was kind of cool. Blind Bargains had one or two, in fact. What's New in Jaws was really good, and it was an interview from something like 2004 with Freedom Scientific. So there was some really neat ones out there, and people really came to play for April Fools. So I know a lot of people find it like kind of not so funny after a while, but this one happened on a Sunday, so that's kind of what made it better, because when it happens on a day feed, you're trying to actually get real news. And a funny thing was what also got released on April 1st was Ashton Kutcher was going to play Steve Jobs in a new movie, and people really had to sit down and decide if that was real or not. Funny thing is,
apparently
it's real.
It is.
Yeah, he's really going to do it.
Dude, where's my Mac?
That shirt, what's it say? Dude, what's mine say? Sweet.
Yeah.
Oh, that was EOL in our Sarah talk. Wait a minute, I'm sorry.
Speaking of which, there is an EOL After Dark that people can listen to as well.
Hop on over to EOLshow.com and take a listen at the pilot that was smuggled out by those nasty spheres and our production manager. So that's a good time too. So definitely check over EOLshow.com.
Well, let's jump into the news this week, and we'll start with social media. I really enjoyed this first article, and we got some interesting comments on Twitter, actually. Twitter gets an A+ in kindergarten classroom. There's a New York public school teacher, Jennifer Aaron, who is using Twitter to kind of help her students put their thoughts into 140 characters. Her thinking behind this is, it kind of helps them focus and helps them be a little bit more concise in their thinking. Some of the tweets they posted were, "We added more days in school stickers. We didn't have any lame reflections, which I found that one kind of interesting.
That was great.
We had snack outside. Hey, I'm all up for that. Bring that on.
I really like this idea. Now, there are some things you have to be careful about. Like if you're going to put a five-year-old on Twitter with their own account, it obviously has to be protected so that they're not going to get a lot of spam and a lot of really scary stuff that is certainly available on Twitter. But I think kids, even older children, still kind of have a hard time describing what their day was like. You know, what did you do at school? Yeah, I don't know. Were you there? Yeah, I was there, but, you know, we just did stuff. That's what we do at school, stuff. So having them describe this in 140 characters, they could say, I don't know, but it's more likely that they are going to actually give a couple of tidbits about what happened. And it makes them think about what happened and how to describe it rather than just thinking, so much stuff happened today. I'm just going to say, I don't know, because I really have no idea where to begin in describing my day.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a controlled situation, like you just said, and with a teacher using this simply as one, I'm sure, of many tools in teaching, I think it's a great thing personally. And I, you know, it's fun. It's easy to do in some respects. I mean, the task itself is easy. The actually organizing your thoughts might not be, but, you know, that's part of the process. So hats off to Miss Aaron for doing this. I think it's a great thing. We have three Twitter rumors and what they could mean for brands. Twitter wants to be more attractive to advertisers. Well, who doesn't, I guess, in this day and age in which we live? I mean, let's face it. We need funding. We need revenue in order for things to keep going, no matter what business it is. And so there are three things to consider. The first one is Twitter being more of an open platform. Third-party developers could potentially use Twitter, for example, to streamline customer support. I'm all for that as well. That could be potentially a good thing, although I have tried to explain things in 140 characters, and things that become a little more complex, it's almost like a comedy of errors after a while. There comes a point when you... Yeah.
It's hard to describe a technical issue in 140 characters. You know, the question, what's wrong? Well, this one time there was smoke coming out of the machine, and then I changed out this and it stopped, but then
continued.
Yeah.
1 of 10, 2 of 10.
Maybe the purchase of Posterous, though, might help. Maybe it'll allow you to link onto a larger thing, or you could send it like an attachment, although that scares me too.
Mm-hmm. The second one, T-commerce. So apparently Facebook wasn't real successful in this. People prefer buying directly from a website, directly from the manufacturer's website, rather than from Facebook or possibly from Twitter. But maybe the integration of Square as a mobile payment service. So maybe like a mobile only with a one-click payment option tied to your Twitter name. That's all we need is just one more one-click thing. I don't know.
Oh,
it's so easy to buy stuff on the internet now. Do we really need an easier way to do it? I'm not so sure. Apparently, 50% of users are accessing Twitter on mobile devices. I found that an interesting stat, although not particularly surprising, I don't think.
Yeah, and then I think a lot of other people are using things, you know, various Twitter clients. I think very few people, and I could be wrong. I'm not just talking about the blind population, but in general, how many people use Twitter from the website rather than something like TweetDeck, where you can organize things and
me.
Well, yes, but do
but
you really
junkie,
represent
man.
The rest of the population? I think
I'd like to think so, but no, I don't. Apple and the iPhone. I think that's where you see a huge jump for mobiles. When Twitter integration came along in iOS 5, Twitter saw a huge jump. And, you know, like Jamie was saying, Twitter's business model has always been kind of shadowy. And in the fact that they don't know what it is, not that they're trying to hide it from us. It's just that they're not sure. When Twitter's the perfect startup that shows you that things can explode and you can grab the zeitgeist of everybody. But then what do you do with it? How do you market it? How do you get things to work? And whether that's shoving ads that are in your timeline that are kind of like what you like or follow already? Or is it a great big kind of box on the side of the web view with an ad for something that I ignore every time I go into Twitter? You know, they've got to do something. And that's kind of what, like you guys said, everybody's had that moment or another. And do you build something and then sell to something like Facebook? Or like what happened with Zynga recently, where this out of nowhere company that made 31 games hit it big with Draw Something. And as soon as they made the top of the Apple iOS games list, they sold to Zynga for like $350 million. They were like, that's it. I'm out. Cash it in. And, you know, Twitter is at a point now where it can't do that. It is kind of a platform, but they have to figure out a way to make that work. So it's interesting.
And the last rumor is contests and sweepstakes. They might go viral. That one I don't really have an opinion about too much one way
yes,
or the other.
You not... Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Jamie,
companies already
if you retweet this from DealSpace, you'll be able to – and this from DealSpace.
Yeah,
and, then this from DealSpace.
And then all my followers can add leave.
Yeah. No, you don't realize you have an opinion, but you really, really do.
Really, really, I do.
Yeah, okay. Companies are already trying this, and I guess it must be successful because I see people retweeting this stuff much as I wish I did not.
Yeah, exactly.
But filters are really good. But, you know, again, people already do this. So the question is, how is Twitter going to capitalize on this and monetize it?
Well, you know, Skype really thinks that Twitter and Facebook degrade humanity. This is an ad that they are releasing.
Yes, it is.
Because really, humans are made to look, listen, and feel, according to Skype. Well, first of all, I've never really felt anything on Skype that I can remember.
I felt annoyance when Skype drops out.
That. So you're having this intimate conversation with someone, and you're about to tell them over Skype your deepest feelings, and then Skype breaks up.
Yeah. And what really amuses me about this is, you know, Facebook and Twitter degrade humanity. On a completely unrelated note, you can check your Facebook timeline through Skype. that's just funny. But the article tries to say that being able to speak with someone and perhaps see them is a lot more human than exchanging 140 characters or writing on a wall or whatever. And I don't really think that's true. Skype is one way to do this, but interacting on Twitter and Facebook, debates can get started with a lot more people at once. Questions can be answered by a lot more people at one time. And they are both valid social venues, I think.
Yeah.
The whole time you've been talking, I keep humming half the lyrics to Tommy over here, See Me, Hear Me.
right.
And I'll go play Pinball Wizard after we're done with the podcast. Most people have enjoyed the ability not to have conversations now. And certainly young people are that way. And it's like the story Jamie told back at Promise Ring and a Password. You know, it's people who are looking down at their navels at their cell phones rather than talk to each other. So this seems really weird and more of a, I guess, when you need to meet that special someone, do it through Skype.
Right, yeah.
You know? well, a weird world we live in. There was a service right now that I saw an ad for both Android and iOS where you can actually check, you can do a background check on somebody. You know, something that used to had to go and hire a private detective. Now there's an app for it.
Yeah.
They were touting, beautiful. You know, check out that person before you date them kind of thing. And it was just really strange. But this, you know, is a way where somebody, you know, before I meet you, I want to see if you're, you know, kind of creepy looking. And I could see that happening in Skype or, you know, and Skype would be kind of cool rather than face chat or something. I mean, FaceTime. There we go.
In Apple news this week, we've already mentioned the fact that the Steve Jobs movie starring Ashton Kutcher really is not a joke. The 2.5 Men star will begin shooting next month for this movie.
I'll never be able to think of him as anyone other than Kelso on That 70s Show.
Yeah. Apparently, the movie starts with the creation of the company in a garage on April Fool's Day in 1976 and goes up to his return in 1997. So that's the part of his life that the movie highlights. I don't know. We'll just have to see. You know, can people accept Ashton Kutcher in this role? Well, Joe, you are probably as much, you and Ricky both are as big a movie buffs as anybody I know and TV show, you know, enthusiasts. What are your thoughts there?
That he's going to punk Bill Gates in the director's cut. remember the show Punked? You know, it's like, you know.
Yes.
I know and have been reading things that he wants to change his image, be that of Ashton. He wants to do more serious roles. You know, most people, when they reach an age, want to be able to leave a legacy. It's one thing to make, you know, shows and TV that appeal to young ones, but, you know, at some point, you want to validate your career, and that's where he is. And certainly he's got enough money from Two and a Half Men, so it's not a money thing. It's right. More of a, I want to be like, you know, George Clooney, Matt Damon, and all the others. So it's probably peer pressure in that respect, too, that now's the time, I'm getting older, I can't play the same roles I used to, so what roles do I want to play? And Justin Timberlake will hit that at some point, too, because he's doing that kind of same role, where he's taking a lot of the young people roles, as we saw with The Social Network. The word on the street is that this isn't going to follow the Walter Isaacson book. That deal is still open at Sony, and Sony has not moved forward on production. So this is a totally different production based off of a screenplay from someone else, not based off of any of the books that we know. The name of the movie is just Jobs, which I'm not sure. Maybe that'll change by the time it gets out. But it's going to be interesting, because who do you cast as Wozniak? If you've got, you know, Ashton Kutcher, you know, do you go get Topher Grace for a while? You know, he's not Wozniak's kind of a large guy. I don't think that will work. But there's going to have to be, but it'd be like a buddy cop movie. So it'll be interesting, and I'm sure there'll be some license taken, just like there was with The Social Network. Like, you know, as Mark Zuckerberg has said, you know, he has people that come up to him and relate to him through the movie, but he always has to remind them that that's not true. You know, I have a girlfriend. I've had a girlfriend for a very long time. So, you know, Hollywood will take its dramatic license, and whether people believe it or not will be the question.
In our next article, it's kind of actually it's very much tongue-in-cheek. It's a funny article to read. I think it's hilarious. Apple should dump the iPod Touch is the title, the headline there. The fact that the Touch is actually a great portable media player, but so many people have moved on to the iPhone. You know, this author says when he mentions that he still has an iPod Touch, people kind of look at him with pity. And, you know, have you not heard about the iPhone?
Does he know there's an iPhone?
Right. There's an iPhone out now. So
he's only a tech editor. I doubt he does know. I
mean, right. Come right. on. I mean, I think it's interesting that the point is made Apple has a 70% share of the MP3 player market, but that it's shrinking and that, you know, that doesn't matter as much anymore, MP3 players, because of the fact that phones taking, you know, this market now.
But so many parents look at the iPod Touch as the gateway drug. They're not ready for a phone yet. Mm-hmm. I'll let them have this. But what did the article say, Ricky?
First, I actually agree with what you just said. My son got an iPod Touch for Christmas. He didn't need a phone yet, but it did everything else that I cared about, including iMessage and FaceTime. So it made a lot of sense. But the article said something that a lot of people can probably relate to. The author uses an Android phone as a phone, but he still has the iPod Touch as a music player and, you know, the game platform and that sort of thing. So
familiar.
Obviously it does still have its yeah. place.
Who else on this podcast?
Who else does that?
I'm not so weird now. See, people? Okay,
well,
no, I'm really still
ourselves.
Not in this area, but definitely not on what we're talking about. Yeah.
And he does talk about how maybe the iPad mini would take the place of an iPod Touch, which I still am having a hard time with, because the iPod Touch can fit in a pocket, whereas the iPod mini, or what apparently was it Samsung or was it somebody else who the people who were making this small, say, 5-inch tablet, and they were calling it a phablet,
Dell.
PH-ablet. Yeah, because it was like a phone and a tablet, which is just awful.
But we say that in the Note, the 5-inch screen Android, I believe it's Samsung Note, is selling incredibly well. And ironically, it's selling to older Americans with eye problems. So the 5-inch, you know, screen on a phone, and I agree with you. I mean, we're talking like cargo shorts or a bag or a Scotty vest or something like that. I totally get with you on what you're saying, but there are some people who do like the larger screen. Although I have seen pictures of people using the Note, and it's like going back in time and looking at somebody use a walkie-talkie. It is rather large when held to your face.
Yeah, you don't even have to wear sunglasses. You just hold this thing up to your face, and it blocks. Nobody can recognize you because this phone is covering up your face. And
I mean, we cover so many news stories, and they're all, of course, over at serotalk.com on our blog. So you can feel free to read any of these articles that you'd like, and we encourage you to. But I especially would encourage you to take a look at this one if you're interested in this at all, because this article really does have so much personality. It's just a very fun read and a lot of humor. Go check that out. Apparently, Consumer Reports is showing the iPad some love, the new iPad, I should say. It's the top tablet, according to Consumer Reports. The things that really are causing it to get this rating include the Retina display, the 5-megapixel camera, and the 4G support. I thought of Joe when I was reading, you know, the 5-megapixel camera and the Retina display, some of the things that he's talked about even for low vision users, that this is fairly compelling now. And I also, something else we've talked about in previous podcasts is the fact that older apps are now beginning to suffer because of their lower resolution. And so they're going to have to figure out how to balance size with taking advantage of the larger resolution or the better resolution. And that's exactly something we've talked about on this show, is that maybe the 16 gig option is not going to be as appealing to people in the future moving forward, because the apps are going to, of necessity, have to become larger.
We have another article talking about how to improve your typing speed on the iPad. It doesn't really matter which version of the iPad you have, whether it's the new iPad or, you know, now what do you call the others? They're not the new iPad anymore, but in any case, one of the things that's mentioned here is turning on keyboard clicks, because it gives a nice bit of feedback as you enter letters. Now, I've discovered that for the iPhone, at least, having those clicks completely off, and I actually mute sounds altogether when I'm typing, because there is the click of your placing your finger over the letter, and that's just with VoiceOver. That doesn't happen in the mainstream population. And then there's the second click for when the letter has actually been entered. And I found that that's a bit distracting, and I can be much faster without those sounds. But your mileage may vary, and you may find that keeping these sounds on does help. Another thing that they mention is splitting the iPad screen. So this has been available for quite some time now, and it gives a way for your hands to be in perhaps more of a traditional position for typing.
Especially in landscape.
Right.
That's where the balance issue comes into play, is do I hold it with one hand and henpeck with the other, or do I do the split thing where I just kind of hold the corners of it and move my fingers back and forth?
Right.
Which I don't have the dexterity to do. As many video games as I've played over the years, I don't seem to have the dexterity to do it or feel like I can do it comfortably. It's neat. I've seen you type on your device before, so they actually could take tips from you, because you're like blindingly fast with it.
Trusting autocorrect was another thing they mentioned, which kind of validates what I do, because I actually leave it on. I know so many people hate it, but I actually find it quite useful.
Yeah, I do this too, though.
Yeah.
Yep.
Zello is hello.
Well, D-I-J-K... And T becomes didn't with an apostrophe that you don't have to enter yourself. So it's all good.
Wow. That's a good thing. It works against you on YouTube, let me tell you.
You might find some things you really didn't want to.
You know, something that I found interesting about this article, as I was reading it, when I first read it, I couldn't decide if it was a specifically assistive technology related or mainstream. It took me a minute to figure out that it was a mainstream article. And that was kind of a mind bender for me, which I think is a good thing because...
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's so relates.
There are so few lines
right.
anymore between the two.
Yeah. In more AT news, we have another article that is directly related to things we've talked about in the very recent past, possibly the last podcast. Sometimes my mind kind of blurs as I'm preparing a podcast ahead and the current one and thinking about the one we've just finished. But this article talks about the effects of gesture patents on accessible devices. And the fact that because these manufacturers are warring over, hey, you can't use that swipe gesture because that's mine, you know, perhaps they need to come to some agreed upon standards for blind people so that we can have some uniformity as far as touch gestures go. And that might be something that would really be beneficial. Not that everything has to be exactly the same. And the author of this article was quick to point that out. You know, it's not that it has to be a carbon copy, but that there might need to be some standards set down by both Apple and Google that say, hey, you know, these gestures are going to be standardized. I personally think that could be a very good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're a trainer, then you only have to learn one set of gestures. And if you are, like many people, either a technology enthusiast or somebody who has to use one device at work and then wants to make a choice to use a different device at home, it's a lot easier on the brain to have a set of gestures that feel natural regardless of which device you're on. It's just a good thing, and I hope that we can come to some understanding here because there are things that make sense, like flicking to the right or left to move between elements. That feels very natural and intuitive. Now, do you have to make this change such that, no, you have to use your pinky and your index finger together to swipe across, and you know you can't use these other two fingers. So,
right.
Or you can do it, but you have to use a three-finger swipe for this, or a five-finger right. swipe for that. Or we actually talked a little bit about this on last week's Serospectives with Robert Carter and Aaron Egger. And Daryl Shandro, along with Lisa and a surprise guest. I'll let you listen to the MP3 archive of that to figure out who that surprise is. But I posed that question to them as well. And it was very interesting to have a conversation about dual-edged swords, about some things that have really helped us. But now that we're getting to the – I don't want to say that we're out of the honeymoon period, but now we're starting to get to a point of exception and expectation with iDevices, because now we expect this to happen, but now we're seeing that there are exceptions for when it doesn't happen. Like, I can't do this because I'm so-and-so, and Android's just a mess, so I don't even want to go there. I've talked about this on that Android Show 7, but it's a conversation that needs to start happening in regards to prior art. Where would we be if we had, you know, keyboards and mice that were different for every system? More than they already are. There was a time actually in Apple land where if you lost the mouse, you couldn't do anything. You know, you were stuck because there wasn't a lot of keyboard shortcuts. It was completely mouse driven. And so,
and even
you know,
right now, going from Windows to a Mac, I had to laugh at my sighted husband who's trying to, with voiceover off, trying to double tap on the trackpad to do a double click. And no, you have to push down on the trackpad. And this one gesture, and he's just cursing. How dare they not have it be the same way?
Yeah. Or double tap with your fingers on the mouse is kind of weird too, to close something. And it's just, it you know, it's different. It's totally different. But hotkeys are happening all over the place. We actually have a list here of iTunes hotkeys, which are pretty cool.
Yeah, this is actually a program, right?
Yeah, it's a piece of software that you can use to make hotkeys for iTunes so that you can be anywhere in the system and still be able to go previous, next, or whatever without having to tab through the iTunes interface.
We also have a download link to the Braille version of the iPhone user guide. I have not actually opened this up and looked at it yet, but everything I've seen from Apple, their Braille files are actually formatted Braille files. You know, a lot of times you'll see something in a BRF format, but the computer code doesn't exist, so everything is all kind of yucky looking, if you're familiar with computer code at all in Braille. But the materials I've seen from Apple, they actually format properly. So the computer code is there. It's actually such that you could run it through an embosser and, you know, Braille it, print it out if you wanted to. So I would suspect that this these Braille files are the same, although I have not actually verified that. Next up, we have a really kind of a popular program right at the moment. We'll see how long it lasts, but Zello brings real-time group chat to your iOS device. Not only your iOS device, but also the PC as well. I have not looked at the PC version yet. I do have it on my iPod Touch 3rd Gen, which, by the way, that device, I think, with the latest iOS operating system version, is starting to kind of show its age. I'm starting to see more and more sluggishness, and so I'm wondering how much longer I'm going to be able to really enjoy using my iPod Touch 3rd Gen with new apps.
You're just looking for a way to justify the iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Absolutely, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, right. That's, you know. But, I mean, this does work. I haven't played with it very long. I've visited one-on-one with a person. Basically, you can add contacts, or you must add contacts, and then you can also add channels. So, for example, there's a Serotalk channel. There's a 3CH channel, and many, many other
people. There's a Serotech channel, and there's an Apple Viz channel.
Yes.
Whole lots of channels, a lot of people jumping on the bandwagon here and getting into this group voice chat thing. So if you haven't checked this out, the app is free in the App Store, and there's also a download for the PC.
Yep. We also have a link to the Hadley School for the Blind podcasts. Their seminars are being made available. This is also available from iBlink Radio. If you want to check it out there, go to the podcast section and check those out. So some good material there. I haven't actually had a chance to in-depth take a look at it, but from what I've seen just briefly, I'm actually looking forward to digging in and seeing what they have to offer there. Hadley's been around for a long time and has done a lot of great work.
They really have. There are several categories like employment, cooking and entertaining, assistive technology, you know, the list goes on and on.
Was it just last week that I mentioned the Hunger Games podcast 102?
Yeah. Yep.
I read all 3 books in a week.
No kidding.
I did. Mornings, evenings, when I should have been in bed, I read all 3 books. I have been an avid reader for most of my life, and it seems like for several months recently, I've just gone through a slump where I would start a book. I actually had 3 or 4 things started, didn't finish things, and it was kind of frustrating me because I really enjoy reading so much. And it's just recently I've been actually getting back into reading. I've finished Killing Lincoln by Bill O'Reilly, and Ford County Stories I'm reading by John Grisham, and then along comes The Hunger Games, and I devoured that 3-book series. And so I'm looking through the news feed, you know, gathering stories for Serotalk as I do every week, and I come across an assistive technology movie review of The Hunger Games.
This was kind of cool, wasn't it?
It
a very
really
interesting
is.
Premise.
This guy actually goes to the movie with his wife. He hadn't read the book, the first book, and she circled, I love this, because she circled on the calendar, "We're going to go to a movie this week." It's like, oh, that sounds familiar. My wife's done that before. It's like, this is what we're doing this Friday night. So he decided, hey, I better, it was kind of funny, the in-laws came, so he decided to let them spend time with the kids, and he shut himself up in his office and read a book. So the idea of the book is that the citizens of Panem, which is North America, what used to be, are ruled over by, you know, corrupt, powerful people. And in order to just kind of show the people that the prior resistance was futile, they make 24 children go from ages 12 to 18 go into arena and fight to the death. And there's only one victor that can come out of this. And he begins, the author of this article begins to look at the Hunger Games and compare it to assistive technology and universal design principles for learning.
Yeah, he talks about perhaps a student entering school and the difference in the supplies that the student has, i.e. assistive technology, can be the difference between losing out completely and basically moving on to the next round.
And the fact that in the book slash movie, things can go wrong, and the gamekeepers, you know, in the book don't want that to happen. But in reality, things are going to go wrong. Things unpredictable are going to happen. And we should actually embrace that and recognize that, hey, you know, we basically learn as we go and we develop strategies as we encounter problems. So don't run away from problems or don't be discouraged by them. Actually embrace them and figure out solutions. In general tech this week, Windows XP won't give up top spot without a fight. This is just kind of a funny article. The whole concept is interesting to me. I mean, apparently a lot of people are still using Windows XP.
It's just been very recently. The OS that just won't die.
It will not die. It absolutely will not. It's going to, though, in April of 2014. So
yeah, so a lot of hackers are probably going to take that opportunity to say, hey, you know what? I bet we have a bunch of systems out there that are no longer being patched for security, and we know
zero
what to do with
day.
Those.
Awesome. Party at ground zero.
Yeah.
But this still shocks me at just how many people are still using XP. A lot of businesses are. I know that, for example, my husband works for a bank. They're still using Windows XP, and we'll be in our staff meetings for Saratech, and from across the room, the Windows XP machine boots and plays its sound. And of course, we're all tech enthusiasts, so everybody's laughing. Who has the XP machine in the room?
Oh, how retro.
Yeah. But
I know people who actually took the Windows XP start sound and put it on the Windows 7 machine. So there's actually,
oh, nice.
The corporations of the world are, though, in the mode to move to Windows 7. There is a lot of slowness in enterprise, and they realize this. They'll walk away. I say that, of course, and some banks still actually use Windows 2000 for one or two database programs.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But Windows 8 will actually allow you to do a lot more virtual sandboxing and virtual machines, and it will come. The irony of this is that those who have original MacBook Airs who can't get the security updates and stuff that are going to come in Mountain Lion will be able to just, you know, drop into boot camp and go to Windows XP and still use that MacBook Air for another 2 years. So that'll be, you know, really good. And the Internet Explorer 9 usage was up this week from ComScore. But that's funny because you can't use IE9 on Windows XP, but yet numbers hurt my brain. It's weird. It's just totally weird. But it also proves, again, once, as we've talked about on the show, that we can find stats to prove just about anything we want.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, you know, 66% of those stats are actually made up.
So, Joe, what do you think about the Google Nexus tablet? It looks like it's been leaked.
I think it was easier for you to say. No, the tablet coming out through Google itself, possibly? When the original Nexus phone came out, there was actually going to be Google selling the phone without carriers. They tried to do a game changer. That sort of worked, but kind of didn't, because at the time, Google really didn't have like support, and they learned a hard lesson that it's really cool to have a bunch of glass iStores. Because people have to ask questions and call in or come by or need resets. And so it really mattered. So Google's learned over time that they need to have a better way of being able to sell these things. And they have learned that lesson now with Google Play. Certainly the acquisition of Motorola Mobility, which is still being held up in the EU, but looks like it might go through. They'll actually get tech support. They'll get a lot of avenues and resources that they didn't have before. So it doesn't seem as unlikely for Google to turn around and sell a tablet themselves now. The other part of this is that the best way to show other developers and other handset makers and tablet makers the power of Android or Chrome, because it's possible it could be running Chrome, is to build it yourself and say, this is the flagship. This is what you should be shooting for. This is what you want to be able to do, and look what you can do with it. And that's important
too. That's a good point, because mm-hmm. I was thinking about that. Does this, I was actually sort of assuming that because Ice Cream Sandwich is only on what, 2% of devices?
2.9 whopping right? percent, yes.
Yeah. Are they looking to do this to showcase the power of ICS? I mean, we don't even know what the reason is for people not adopting this. So is Google trying to say, look, ICS is really cool and we're going to show you how to do it on this tablet? Or again, is it another case of Google just trying stuff because they can?
Well, that, but let me confuse you a little more. If you do have ICS, if you do have Android 4.0, and you're on HTC, you may still get HTC Sense UI on top of Android 4.0. So you don't really have plain vanilla out-of-the-box Ice Cream Sandwich.
Yeah.
You have a modified version. And the same goes for Motorola Blur, and the same goes for Samsung and all these others. It's really hard to find a what's in the industry called non-skinned vanilla version of Android. And what I mean by that is just plain Android with nothing on top of it. Mm-hmm. And so it's very possible that Google could do a better representation of what Android can do unmodified by releasing their own flagship and saying, this is it. We're going to take what Microsoft is doing with Nokia and the Lumina series, and we're going to make the stellar platform, and everybody should adhere to this. It doesn't mean it's going to happen, but it's certainly worth an attempt, and it doesn't really hurt anything. And Android tablets are coming down so much in price now that I believe I found one in my box of Captain Crunch. So there's a possibility that, you know, they'll kill them with kindness and kill them with price and then just saturate the market. And that is working, you know, to some respect. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of Android devices out there just through sheer numbers and mass.
Last week we talked about G Drive that's coming out from Google. Looks like Dropbox is doubling their referral rewards, offering up to 32 gigabytes.
Storage wars. I love
it.
Yeah, it's awesome. We all benefit. I did have to kind of wonder about the timing of this. And it was so funny to see all these people wake up and go, I just got an extra gig or two in my Dropbox and I have no idea why. But they did send out emails that described the reason for this, and well, at least the reason for your randomly getting an increase. They didn't necessarily say why they decided to do it, but for every person that you have referred to Dropbox and who then signs up, you're now getting, it's 500 megs, 512, as opposed to 256.
And then they tell two friends, and they tell two friends, and so on, and so on, and so on. No, I think it's something like that. I think it's bumped like close to six or something like that is max. There's details here in the article that we have here in the show notes. And it's still one of those where you've got to go convince your friends to go try Dropbox. And, you know, that's
and
not
who
a bad
hasn't
thing.
Yet, though? You know,
it's
I should put Netflix ads. I should put my referral link in the show notes for anybody who doesn't have Dropbox yet. Go give me space by signing up.
If you feel like being very charitable for that, please go to the show notes and help Ricky out with a charitable donation. No, I'm kidding.
There you go.
But yeah, no, we should. But it's like Netflix ads. You know, you see Netflix ads on television, and you're like, wow, there are people who really don't know what Netflix is now, some couple of years later of streaming, let alone almost a decade of sending out DVDs and more in the mail. I actually remember when Netflix was doing still some videotapes, for crying out loud, for specialty movies.
I remember when Reed Hastings was coming to people's houses and washing their dishes.
That was a Conan O'Brien sketch. That was actually kind of funny. That's interesting.
Well, coming up after the break, the mailbag opens up and 10 things kids don't have to worry about these days, right here on the Sarah Talk podcast.
I'm Sarah, and this is my story.
I'm Ellen, and this is my story.
One night, I was at a bar. I was having fun with my friends. I had one too many drinks. I got behind the wheel to go home.
I got a cab to go home.
All of a sudden, from out of nowhere, a squirrel ran across the road. It happened so quickly, I barely had time to react.
The cabbie barely had time to react. The cab swerved.
I can't believe it. I hit a guy.
I cannot believe it. The cabbie just missed a guy.
I wish I took a cab.
Thank goodness I took a cab.
You have the choice to save a life. Don't drive buzzed. It's a decision you'll never regret. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
We're back here on Sarah Talk Podcast 103, and it's time for the mailbag. This week, Jake Yale tells us that he met Mr. Rogers personally, actually, when he was young and got to meet him. So much good feedback on the Mr. Rogers segment. People really have some great memories. We've said that before, and we really appreciate you all sharing those with us. Janine Stanley works for Guide Dog Foundation, and she talks about the fact that, you know, one of the reasons why these guide dog schools might be letting young children use guide dogs even before they go blind is for awareness, getting their name out to the public. They need funding, and like it or not, that is one way that people might have an increased awareness of these schools. She's not sure she really agrees with the premise totally. There are some concerns there, but it's one explanation, possibly. She also makes the comment that you can get lost faster with a dog than you can with a cane. So she agrees that good O&M skills are really important before you get a dog. Facebook acquaintance is also somewhat accessible, we learn. Steve Whitaker enjoys our comedy. Well, thank you, Steve. We certainly appreciate that. A couple of blog post comments. Sue Ward really enjoyed the biggest note taker bit, and she talks about how far speech synthesizers have come, and man, they have come a long ways. John Herzog loves the purchase of his GTO, and you're going to have read this one to appreciate it. And we will include, by the way, all of the emails and blog comments that we use on this show this week. We will include them in the show notes so you can actually read them. And you really need to read John's response, because he has about as much fun with the response as we did putting the segment together. Ricky, you have some iReports for us this week.
I do. The first one comes from George McDermott, and he's talking about electric typewriters that we recently kind of went down memory lane about the things that we had to deal with as youngins, and he gives us his thoughts on this.
Hi, guys. This is George McDermott calling from beautiful Colorado. Just want to say how much I enjoyed your podcast 101. Great job as ever. Also, really enjoyed the recollections regarding using the electric typewriter. It made me recall when I was in college and having to do all the books on tape and e-live readers and all that. And, of course, now there's all the electronic school books and such. And so I'll talk with students and they'll be sitting there going, oh, you had to use tapes? And it's like, yes, I feel like a Neanderthal because, you know, back in the dark ages we had to use tapes. So anyway, it was just a great walk down memory lane, kind of like when Ricky was mentioning, I think it was on Podcast 100, about the smell and sound and feel of opening up a fresh Braille book. Nothing quite like it. I love my Braille display and use it with system access, great stuff. But there is certainly something to be said for the feel and texture of having an actual hard copy book. So anyway, thanks for the great job, guys. Looking forward to the next episode. Have a good one.
Awesome, George. Good to hear from you. Definitely appreciate that. The next message that we have is from Mike Arrigo, talking a bit about System Access to Go.
Hey there, everybody. It's Mike Arrigo, and commenting on Podcast 102. Before I get to that, though, just wanted to do a shout-out for System Access to Go. My mom got a computer and needed some help setting that up. So was over there and setting that up and was able to just go to sa2go.com and get that going and just log into my account from there and, you know, set up the computer for her, get that up and running and get all the Windows updates installed and everything. It was great. That is an awesome service to have for sure. Regarding Podcast 102, with these lithium batteries, so lithium ion, which all the iDevices and phones and laptops use, the way it's supposed to work, from what I've worked, is, you know, in the old days with the NiCad and even nickel metal hydride batteries, what would happen is a lot of times they would just trickle charge, you know, all the time until you unplug the charger. That would be it. And then, or the fast chargers even would be intelligent and they would go down to trickle charge once the battery was charged. The way the lithium ion / lithium polymer batteries are supposed to work, apparently, is once the battery is charged, the charging circuit is supposed to shut off totally. And then at that point, the device would use the battery or at least use the power supply. But the charging circuit is supposed to shut off because with these lithium ion batteries, overcharging could definitely cause a problem with explosive gases and all kinds of bad stuff. So that is how it's supposed to work. And that podcast on Narrator with Windows, yeah, I think it definitely was not biased. What that seems to be is, of course, in VoiceOver on the Internet, you have two modes on the Mac. You have Document Object Model or DOM mode, and then you have Group mode. DOM mode is generally how I use it, and I think that's how probably most people use it, where you move item by item. That's how it works on the iDevices also. The Group mode is kind of like that, where you have, like, I don't know, you like a list of 10 links. It might say, you know, like list with 10 items, and you have to interact with that to see all the different links. But what this sounds like with the Narrator in Windows 8 is kind of VoiceOver Group mode times 10.
Thanks very much, Mike.
Be sure and send us your comments, resources@saratalk.com. Go over to saratalk.com and leave a comment on the blog if you'd like. You can certainly leave us an iReport via iBlink Radio, either on iOS or Android, or you can call us at 866-997-2522. And yes, that is Blab, 866-997-BLAB-2522. We always love to hear from you guys. It's time now for Roundabout.
Roundabout.
This week's Roundabout story, 10 things kids today never have to worry about.
I remember crawling up both sides of the lawn and having to go around in the snow and carry all sorts of... Yeah, this is awesome. Uh-huh.
Sonny, we carried our bits to and from the server every day.
Absolutely.
Uphill in the snow,
mm-hmm.
both ways.
Under 1,200 baht. 1,200 baht or less. You kids don't even know.
Well, you know, kids don't even have to text full words anymore. They don't have to type it out anymore. They just abbreviate everything.
Lazy, BRB. No good kids with their anagrams and their extensions and their short words that mean nothing to me and their misspellings.
It's a conspiracy.
I am such a curmudgeon. Because I really hate seeing this. Whenever somebody puts "you are" to represent "your," I want to punch things. And
continue.
And then, yeah.
C-O-N-T.
And then they have the number 4 for F-O-R, and I get the need to save space and all that. It just it grates on my nerves, and I hate it. It's like they murdered the English language.
I remember a story from like 2 years ago when professors were really upset because people were using emoticons in like Blue Book and theses.
Oh, no.
The fall of the Roman Empire was really sad. You know, unhappy face.
Right. Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. And the little winky smiley face.
See, I think they do it because old folks don't know what they're saying, so they can say anything they want to that way.
And wasn't it weird when screen readers started to read that? Either the actual bracket and colon, or then when we finally did get emoticon speech or labels, then it was smiley.
Well, it was weird because then I had to look, because for a while there were people in the blind community who would spell out smile. And so then I would always look, okay, did the person
spell out smile, or did the screen reader pronounce the emoticon smile?
I'll tell you which
greater
one
than
got me.
Grin, greater than, yeah.
Yes.
Sometimes in an email, you'll see FYI, you know, but the first time I really was aware of this is when I heard, for your information, and then the comment, it was like, that was kind of rude. And then I looked, right. And it was just the end. It's like, okay, it's not so rude when you just say FYI.
By the way, Jamie.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the way eloquence, well, for your information. It's like, whoa.
Like, well.
Exactly.
So, thanks for sharing. It's like, yeah, kids don't have to do this anymore. They'll just put L-Y, lie. What do you mean? Are you lying to me? No, that means love you.
Oh, good.
You realize we're just on number one. We haven't even gotten to the other nine.
Yeah, that's a whole other podcast. This article is really good at explaining this and or more.
We're going to include this roundabout segment in the next three podcasts. We're going to cover each of these in detail.
We invite you to come in and give your eye reports about what you have trouble accepting in your life now that you're older. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. They don't have to miss TV shows anymore, thanks to Netflix and other
time shifting,
right? DVRs. Or DVR or whatever. Yeah. Yep.
You watch when
now,
you want.
Gray mail—that's kind of a visual thing, apparently. I don't quite. That one's not so helpful.
Yeah, I don't understand that one. But there's pen pals. Nobody's pen pals anymore.
No.
And I can remember doing this. You know, having a pen pal where, depending on whether they were blind or sighted, you had to type or braille the letter and send it via post, right? Mm-hmm. And you'd wait a couple of weeks for somebody to respond. Now you just do it all by email or Skype.
It's some mailing lists, too, because I came home one day to talk to my parents, and there was a stack of Christian Record Braille 4-track cassettes.
Oh, yeah.
I was staring at them going, wow, that still happens in 2012? Crazy, you know? But there used to be pamphlets in Braille. You would look forward to getting, you know, giant newsletters in Braille. You would always have them folded up back and forth. Well,
Did you ever do that?
The Braille stuff that was folded into the size of a small Triscuit because they couldn't get it in your mailbox.
Right, yes. But actual recording of tapes, you know, you'd say, hi, my name is so-and-so. And you'd go on this long rambling diatribe to the person that you couldn't see. And you knew you weren't going to get a response. Yeah, you weren't going to get a response for like a month or whatever. Yeah,
totally. And I don't have any of those.
Now it's just FaceTime or Skype. Hi.
Yeah.
It's like my grandparents responded to some of those and they're both dead now. It's like, man, I wish... Who knew that we needed to hang on to some of those, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy.
It is. Well, that's going to do it for this week. That's going to wrap up Serotalk 103. Resources at serotalk.com. iReport. Go check out our show notes at serotalk.com. Go over to iTunes.
Rating us on iTunes. Yep.
Yeah. So until next time, have a great week.
Thanks for listening.
Initial flesh into the mode taking cruel. Last year we took Metro Technologies to a whole new level. This year we were kind of forging to do something bold and new and fresh. Then we saw geared up and realized that we could just release an accessory to the VTO and then go play ending with Brent for the next 3 months of the development cycle instead. With this goal in mind, we sent out for some great chicken find a loo and began the 3-5 minute wait for the food to arrive by designing our newest addition to the VTO product line. What if you took the flexibility of the VTO and combined it with the power of portability? 3 hours of battery life sound pretty attractive, right? But aren't you so tired of company advertising low battery life and never living up to expectations? Wouldn't it be nice if you knew the adverb control of how long your battery lasts? Well, dream no more. We are excited to unveil our fantastic new accessory, the somewhat unwieldy cumbersome kinetic energy recorder for your VTO debit. Now you can enjoy your VTO on the beach, in the airport, or just about anywhere you need to be with the knowledge that your debit battery life is in your capable and the S-U-C-K-E-R gets its energy from your body motion, not from some antiquated wall outlet. Need to send an important tweet about the delicious sandwich you just ate? The VTO doesn't support Twitter, but if it did, all you'd have to do is do the 40-40-415 minutes, and the S-U-C-K-E-R should deliver just enough power to your VTO unit to roll over the input of that precious 140 characters. And remember, you're not getting your power from the electric company, it's coming right from your own outwardly flailing self. How green is that? But wait, we can be even greener. We have created the carrying cases for all our products out of clothing we have found from the finest of second and storage. This means that every carrying case is highly unique, blending an array of colors and fabrics in a way that should grab the attention of everyone. Yellow corduroy and purple polyester is just one stunning example that we've created. We have also worked to repurpose all our plastics by melting down a virtually endless supply of AOL synopsis we have collected over the years, and we smear this mixture haphazardly on every carrying case to give it that shiny look. But we didn't stop there. At the launch of the VTO last year, we heard from lead developer Rusty Meadows about his inspiration for the product. This year, he had this to say about the S-U-C-K-E-R. I was reading this awesome book about a contest to find an Easter egg in an online virtual world. All the references to 1980s culture and old technology really resonated with me. But another thing that caught my attention was the part where the kid shorts the battery in his space heater by working out on an exercise bike. I thought, poor kid, if only he'd had a dog to do that for him. While the rest of the team gulped George Dollar and debated whether Kirk or Picard was the better captain, Rusty Meadows set out to build the rotational operating flywheel link catcher for mobile with the ROFL. You can use that lady service animal that lies listlessly at your feet to power your services. Using our patent pending force attraction technology, your service animal can climb inside the 6-foot in diameter wheel to spin your services back into the green in no time. Just place the optional squeak toy, loaded phone or back on pipe a little out of reach of your furry capacitor and you are off to green, green battery glitz. Need a cumbersome and unwieldy way to all around your cumbersome and unwieldy debit and accessory? How about the collapsible rolling short? Well, it's more of a little red wagon than a short, but it does collapse whenever the S-U-C-K-E-R or R-O-F-L is placed on it. But why take our word for how fantastic these new accessories are? Instead, read this testimonial from Mrs. Myrtle Schleppenboder and judge for yourself. Let's hear Mr. Schlepp and Boda. Maybe I should just show him Brett. Anyway, Brett don't need to be people. For our 50th wedding anniversary, all our friends were going on delighted, but not us. My Brett wants to give me a gift that will leave its mark on the world. This year, when Brett hears about all this exciting stuff, he said he'd have no argument from me, so he went right out, and he followed his denture and his doobie. He bought me a shiny new S-U-C-K-E-R, an R-O-F-L, and of course, that collapsible short. So here I was, on the day of our anniversary, I had just let Fluffy eat my rotula. Guys got back in the house when I felt his strange rumbling, and it got louder and louder. Then I heard my friend shout, "I love you, Myrtle." And there was a crash so loud, it scared Fluffy and me real bad. There was a puddle on the floor, but I guess I won't say any more about that. So I went outside, and right in front of the door was my wonderful gift. The door did collapse, just like he had said, and there wasn't a dent or scratch on any of it. At first, I thought one of them Freddy Carey cases got stuck under the wheels, but they were fine. My friend at the European Asian said, not so much. A neighbor told me he saw the exact point when it all went downhill, and I mean literally downhill. We live at the bottom of Mile High Hill. Fred was doing pretty well until the short picked up some momentum. I don't want to say it ran him over and collapsed on him. I much rather think of it that now my Fred had the old clean body he had always dreamed of. And the S-U-C-K-E-R and his other fine stuff had made my dreams come true. Thank you, Fred. And thank you, Serotek. My life will never be the same. So what are you waiting for? Pick up the phone to order your S-U-C-K-E-R fashionable carrying case or OFL and collapsible rolling short today. We'll be happy to take your Indian food this year. We'll be too busy cramming our mouths with fine Delu and Nan to take your order. Shimp and Evo Novo Hybrid are standing by.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life. We'll be right back.